Hi, and welcome to this exam prep session for 695, 696, part one. My name's Chris Rhodes, I'm an MCT and a Microsoft MVP, and I'm here with my friend Michael.
Thanks, Chris. Michael Bender here, MVP. You can check me out on Twitter, at Michael Bender. And yeah, we're here for the exam prep session. So we're gonna get you all prepped up and ready to go for the 695 and the 696 exams. So, Chris is going to run through a little bit with the new certifications to give you a little bit of an idea of what you're actually prepping up.
Yeah, right. Thanks. So, the two exams we've mentioned here are actually designed really as a package. So, we're addressing this exam prep session also in the same way. We're targeting here towards getting you ready for the MCSE, Enterprise Devices and Apps certification. And we're doing this as a two-parter, okay? We're doing this so that you've got a more rounded, holistic view of the world, so that you know exactly what's happening as far as the exam objective domains are concerned, but we're wrapping these up really as together as one. So as part of that, what we're gonna be doing here is we're gonna be really addressing the areas of deployment and managing devices and apps through these two parts. This is part one we're gonna do now, and then we hope that you join us for part two once you finish watching this one. And what we're trying to get you to is that point where you're now getting closer to being able to take the test. The whole goal of this session here is to get you to the point where you're saying, yes, I'm comfortable, or no, maybe I need to wind back a little bit, do a little bit more study, practice with my virtual machines, practice with my labs, that little bit more, until I've just got it quite right. So we're hoping to get you to that decision point where you can say, yeah, I'm ready to go for it, or no, I just need to wind back a little bit. So in terms of the certification, we're targeting here for you to get to the MCSE devices and apps level, which is on the right of the diagram here. We're hoping that you've already obtained at this point your 697 Windows 10 certification. And we're taking that forwards now to the MCSE level. Now we have a separate exam prep session for 697. So if you haven't got to that point yet, I would strongly advise you have a look at that because that's where you should have started your journey. And now we're taking you that extra step beyond that now towards getting your MCSE. For those people who have certified on the Windows 8 exams, or they've done Windows Server 2012 MCSA, then it's actually perfectly okay to substitute those for the Windows 10 697 exam and use that as your start point on this journey, and then now take the 695, 696 to finish off. Now, along the way, we're gonna be touching a lot of technologies over these two tests. I know we all like acronyms working in IT, and here's just a few that we're going to be talking through. So you need to make sure that you guys are familiar with programs and technologies that you'll find on this list. So the ADK, for example. Now, the ADK is the Automated Deployment Kit, which includes a whole bunch of tools. We've mentioned a few here on this slide, but you really need to have practiced using those tools quite a bit, and they'll come up in the slides that follow. MDT, Configuration Manager. You need to be very fluent with those and have used them quite a bit, also in conjunction with one another, because, for example, MDT and Configuration Manager can integrate with one another too.
You know, some good things on there, and you've mentioned this a number of times, Chris, is that you really have to be in the product. Being somebody that is heavily certified, what I can say is that the biggest thing, yeah, you can know this stuff from the book, but you really need to know what is in the product. You need to be able to really visualize those. So as you said, having those tools installed, played around with, you absolutely have to do that. So if you haven't done that with all those tools we just showed, you really need to take a step back and start taking a look at those. Would you agree?
For sure. There's no way that you can get past these exams without having the hands-on with every single one of these. That's why we're calling them out. You know, we're not just saying, okay, you may only need to learn one or two of these. No. You have to have installed them all, played with them all, you know, really done it to death. So you know those tools inside and out, and also how they work with one another, most importantly as well. So yeah, absolutely, hands-on is really, really essential. You're not gonna be able to pass these tests just by reading one book or watching one video. You've gotta have the hands-on for sure.
Absolutely. So on 696, there's a number of things for 696 you wanna take a look at. So as you can see here, there's a number of objectives. So you want to make sure you're familiar with group policy objects, RDS, remote app, all of those acronyms, WSUS, Intune Config Manager. This exam covers a lot of enterprise technology. So you're going to need to make sure that you've covered those as well. So just like the other tools, you want to make sure that you've spent time inside of these. So as far as the skills measured in 695, which is the deploying Windows devices and enterprise apps, we have a number of different areas that we break out here for you. So the first one we have is implementing an operating system deployment, or ODS, infrastructure. And notice all of these have a percentage next to them. We've got implement light touch, implement zero touch, create and maintain desktop images, and then preparing and deploying an application environment. The big thing to remember here is that these are fluid percentages. So you aren't going to get specifically percentages that fall into those. And it doesn't mean that if something is 40% of the exam, you spent, twice as much time with there. You want to make sure that you hit all of the areas and take a look at the domain objectives and make sure you cover everything that falls in there.
Exactly. And the same is true. We have the 696 skills measured area here for you as well. Exactly the same message here. Don't worry too much about the individual breakdowns. The percentages are there as a guide. Like Michael said, don't worry too much about that. Don't spend 14% of your time only on that first section. And, don't worry about that. It's approximately level between each of the areas. So what we're hoping to do is walk you through those in these two-part series of exam prep sessions, so you've got a much more valid idea of what comes up underneath each of those sections. So without further ado, why don't we drill down, show the folks exactly what we're talking about, and give them some idea about what those OD areas are, and for each of the sections, what kinds of things they can expect.
Sounds great. So in the first area, we're getting into plan for and implement application compatibility and remediation. So in here, we're really taking a look at the planning considerations. So you're looking at RDS, VDI, your client Hyper-V, and you're also looking at 32 versus 64-bit. You also need to be looking at planning for application version coexistence. So when you have different versions of applications, what are you going to do with those? And a tool that's really important during this section is the Application Compatibility Toolkit. So this is one of those you're absolutely going to be working with. And then you get into deploying your compatibility fixes. So let's take a look at one of our first questions. So in this question, you're setting up a POC lab for remote desktop services, and you don't want to install the RDS licensed server or to purchase RDS CALs until the end of your grace period. How long is this grace period? So if we take a look at the answer is 120 days. You'll find this out when you install RDS. It'll tell you right in the wizard that 120 days is what you get, and you're going to get a countdown timer in there as well. So you need to make sure that you know these things as you're going into that environment.
Yeah, and it's interesting, this one, because we're calling out specifically a POC, proof of concept lab. We're not building this out for production use. We're experimenting with this. We want to see how it goes. So we don't actually need the licensing server there on day one. We can live for a little while, get us over the initial hurdle of sorting out our applications before we're ready to go live.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's take a look at another question that we have here as well to give you some real world sort of experience. Application engineers in your group have identified an incompatibility of an application with Windows 8.1, and your Windows 8.1 deployment has been completed already. What do you do now? So in this case, we're going to use the Application Compatibility Toolkit, once again from the ADK that we mentioned before, to deploy a fix. Now this fix is in the form of an SDB file, and you can use the command line sdbinst.exe to slip that into an image that's already been deployed. So you can retrospectively apply these patches, these fixes, to help your applications get remediated even after your rollout has completed. So make sure you know about ACT, how to use it, when to use it. Typically, we'd use that as part of building our image and getting our applications ready for deployment in the first place, but know that you can also retrospectively apply those as well, in this case from a command line.
So the next question we're going to take a look at is taking a look at desktop support tech technicians in your group need to identify compatibility issues when you're migrating business apps from XP to Windows 8.1. So which technologies and tools would you advise them to investigate? So we see we have a number of answers here. And when we take a look at the answer, we see that the answers are deprecated operating system features, since we're running XP, and using ACT. And then we see that the second one is C, using UAC and also using ACT. So what's really important here is that one of the techniques that's really important when you're going for certification exams is getting rid of answers. So when we look at this question, it's actually pretty easy to get to the two answers, because A and D refer to the Microsoft Assessment and Planning tool. While this tool is used, this is designed specifically for infrastructure and OS software planning. It's not designed for applications. So as you're going through there, you go, oh, that refers to MAP. I know that MAP is not the tool for the job. So that's something you really want to keep in mind as you're going through your certification test. And this will really help you in the testing environment, is if you know what the tool does, they're going to often throw in answers that answer another question, but not the specifically the one you're on. So keep that in mind and always try to be getting rid of questions as you're going through the getting rid of answers as you're going through each of the questions. And that way it makes it easier if you need to take an educated guess. You've gotten rid of some things there.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, a comment I sometimes get from my students is, yeah, but Chris, I know I'm not going to use MAP in my environment. It's not something I've had experience of. Okay, so make sure you've installed it at least. You've walked around it. You know when you would use it, even if you don't intend to use it for production use, that you've spent 10, 15 minutes installing it, going to the trouble of looking through, when would I use that? Under what circumstances does that tool come into play, as opposed to, in this case, ACT, which is our correct answer.
So next, we're going to take a look at deploying Office 2013 by using the MSI. So they go through a number of different areas in this objective domain. So customizing your deployment, managing the Office 2013 activation, managing the Office settings, how to integrate that with a light touch deployment, how to rearm Office 2013, and also how do you slipstream and provide updates at a later time. So the question, we're going to take a look at our question here. So which two supported methods can you use to deploy Office 2013 from a Microsoft installer file? So we've got Microsoft Intune, we've got AppWiz Server Edition, we've got software installation in a group policy login script. So that would mean this would be installing as you're logging in. So if you think about that, that's going to be a long process, because we all know Office is pretty big. You've got the Office deployment tool, and then you've got a GPO in the startup script. So if we look at the answers, we see that this is Microsoft Intune and then a GPO in the startup script. Because remember, the way this question is worded, it doesn't necessarily, it's looking for two supported methods, so you know you need two here. The other thing is, remember, this exam covers Config Manager, which is going to be on-prem, and it covers Intune, so that's going to be up in the cloud. So those are our best answer. AppWiz is one of those that it's kind of a bad answer, because AppWiz is actually the application wizard for uninstalling stuff on Windows, but it's not. There's no Server Edition, so that's just kind of been made up. Software installation, we know that that's not a great way to do it. So that's another key when you're doing certification tests, is always look for the best answers. So there might be one that you could possibly do, but you want to do the best one for the scenario.
Yeah, I mean, technically, could I do C if I was in a production environment? Would C be valid as a method?
You could technically do that, but most places are not going to do that.
Right.
Most places want to apply it. I think most places probably want to apply it to the computer during startup. Would you agree?
Absolutely. We don't want to delay people when they're logging in.
You know,
the whole thrust of C is, well, let's do that when they log in. Sure, you could. But again, I just draw you back to the question here. Look at what the questions are actually reading out. It's saying, which is the supported methods, okay?
Absolutely.
Various methods may work, but which are supported? Now, that sometimes is really important. And a lot of companies obviously will want to follow the best practice, want to follow the support lines that Microsoft give out anyway, as well as part of their strategy.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's take a look at our next section here. This is looking at how we can deploy applications using System Center 2012 Configuration Manager. So again, like you were saying before, Michael, people need to have played with this. They needed to have actually used Configuration Manager. It's not good enough just to say, oh, I know what Config Manager does. It does inventory, it does software deployment. It does, but you've got to have had hands-on with that. You need to know exactly how to do that. What are my options? What are the different methods? Because even within Configuration Manager, there are different ways of doing things. So for example, in this case, you need to know a little about the software catalog. The application catalog and the software library that the administrator is going to build up with the applications that are going to get deployed. But also, you need to know about the different ways of deploying. You know, there's three, four, five different ways that an administrator could deploy an application. You've got to have rehearsed those and know the differences. So let's walk over to one of the questions that we've got around Config Manager here. So in which Config Manager scenarios would have software installed silently without any user input whatsoever? Okay, now a lot of these questions look similar, and as a test-taking technique here, let's try and read multiple lines at the same time to see if we can get the answer here. Many of these look similar, but let's see what the difference is. Are we looking at user collections or device collections? That's one thing that we need to kind of use as a differentiator in our minds when we're reading these, so we're not overwhelmed with all the available choices. Also, is this mandatory? Is it available or is it required? If you've used Configuration Manager, you will know the differences between those. So the right answer, or answers in this case, should stand out to you, that it's a required option that we need to go for rather than making it available. We need to make sure that this is getting done. The whole point is to do this without the user input, taking them out of the equation. So by doing it as a required update and publishing that out to user or devices, that's going to get it done.
Very good. So then we want to plan an application distribution strategy. So this is how you're going to push out those apps to everything. So we have to look at the impact on clients due to offline access. You have to look at your deployment structure. Are you a single site? Are you multiple sites? Do you have remote locations? You need to look at all of those pieces. You need to choose the appropriate application distribution method based on all of the information that you know about your organization. Yeah. Then you need to plan how to distribute, and that's going to be driven by what type of devices are in your environment. Are you running Windows Phone? Are you running Windows RT, iOS, Android? All of those things are going to determine how you're actually going to go, and it's going to build into that application distribution strategy that you're going to play through.
I've got a point here that Microsoft are now looking at all up. You know, before 5 years ago, these exams were only about Windows technologies. We never even recognized that iOS existed. Now, we live in a modern world where we have to expect that people have a variety of devices. Bring your own device, choose your own device, a really common place throughout the work environment now. So we need to be able to support those. I need to be able to ensure that my iOS device can run a certain app, that my Windows phones can run the app, and so on and so on. How do we do that? So we need to be supportive of that. So you'll find that as a running theme throughout all of these two tests. We're not just focusing on Microsoft tech. That may not be the right answer here, or from the client side of things. And also mobility. You'll notice from this structure here that we're very much thinking about not just land-based clients, clients that may be in a remote site, but also off-site users, people that are working from home, people that work in the field. These are very common themes nowadays, and it's imperative we know exactly how to support those people and which options we select in each case. So moving forwards, one area that you must be proficient in here is the ability to manage devices with Intune. Intune is very much part of the stack now. Not everyone's going to use it, but again, like before, you must have experience of this to know, okay, well, when would I use Intune? Even big companies that may use Configuration Manager actually still use Intune because it's a very good option for those field-based computers that may not be in touch with the network all that often, even if they're using VPN now and again. So you've got to know when Intune is great on its own, when Intune is also good with Configuration Manager when they're integrated together, And also know how to manage your devices. Now, Intune can do quite a lot, and it's one of those technologies that's a bit of a moving target because it's constantly evolving. It's like Office 365. That tech is constantly changing. So you've got to know, you've got to be kind of on the ball with the latest wave here in terms of your learning. So if you use this 2 or 3 years ago, it's different now. There's a lot more options. So you need to know a little bit about how you're going to integrate that back in your site if you're running Configuration Manager, but also how to run it on its own as well. So what I thought we'd do here for a couple of minutes is just have a little bit of a deeper dive around Intune itself as a technology, just to reiterate on that and show you what's available in there. Because I remember using this, like I say, 3, 4 years ago when it first came out, and it was great, but this is now 4 times bigger than it was. Okay, so let's dip out of the slides for a second and go to our demo. Okay, so I've set up a very simple demo account on here, and anyone can do this free of charge. You can set up a 30-day trial here. So from a learning point of view, this is perfect. No obligation to spend money here at all or even register your credit card. So go set yourself up an account if you haven't done so already. And you should be doing this as part of your study, for sure. And if you don't know the whole way around Intune, we're not going to teach you the whole thing now, but let's have a quick look around. Oop, I told you that might happen.
Absolutely. That's what happens on.
I did promise that was going to happen, and it wouldn't be a live demo without doing that. So what we're going to have a quick look at here is some of the interface options that an administrator may see to do with how they manage their devices. So the first real thing here is, how do I get my devices using Intune? So one of the first things the administrator is going to do when they create a subscription here is they'll want to enroll their devices and get them registered with Intune in the first place. So one of the first things I often do here, let's go down to admin, go to the client software download, and for my Windows computers, I would download here the client software, which comes in the form of a zip. I can unpack that, run that on a machine, and that machine will then start talking via its agent back up to the cloud. And once it's doing that, it's receiving instructions from Intune. So if we want to go ahead and push out an application, we can do that. Not only can we see the applications installed on our clients, but we can push applications to our clients as well. So we can upload apps. These can be your own apps. These can be apps you've bought off the shelf, or ones you've authored yourself, and you can deliver those down to maybe all of your computers, or maybe just some of them. You can pick by different parameters here what you want to deploy your applications onto. Maybe it's Windows x86 computers only. Maybe it's other devices. So you can select that stuff here. And one area that is not really well known so much is policies. So with policies, an administrator can actually control what happens on machines. So for example here, if we go to configuration policies, there's a wide variety of different policies that you can set up. And it's not just Windows. You can see iOS is in here as well, for example. But if we drill down into Windows, you can see there's often things like configuration for specific operating system versions. Or you can send out more general things, such as rolling out certificates. Maybe your company has just set up a certificate authority, and you want your users' PCs to recognize that so they can start using the applications that were signed using certificates that came from that authority. You first need the devices to trust that authority before you can do that. So this is a really simple way of rolling out that certificate to your devices. Once they're enrolled in Intune, they're going to get this.
Well, that's great stuff. So why don't we jump into, let's take a look at a little question for Windows Intune. So which devices can be managed with Microsoft Intune? So we choose all that apply. So we've got in our question, I think.
We're coming.
We're coming here. So we're going to have a list of different options so that you can see which of the options we have. So here we've got our different devices, MacBook Pro. We've got Windows RT, Surface Pro 3. Windows 8 Professional 32-bit, Windows Phone 8, and Red Hat Enterprise Linux 6 and 7. So if we take a look at the answer here, we see that Windows RT, Surface Pro 3, Windows 8 Professional, and Windows Phone 8 are available here. The big thing to keep in mind is that a MacBook Pro does not run iOS, and Red Hat Enterprise Linux is not Android. So you can, iOS and Android are things that you can manage through Intune, but these other operating systems are not. So when you're looking at desktops with Intune, you're pretty much looking at the Windows environment. And who knows? Who knows what they're working on over in Redmond? That could change in the next two weeks. And that's another thing to really keep in mind with Intune. When Chris was showing that, I haven't seen that version of Intune because I haven't been in there in a while. My last version was completely different with that. So the big thing when you're working with these cloud technologies is you need to make sure you understand what the things are doing and not simply clicking buttons and going here and there. You need to know the background with how all that stuff works.
Yeah, and as we've said before, this is evolving technology. So if you were proficient in this 12 months ago, well, that's going to be helpful, but it's not going to give you the whole story. This is a bit like Azure in that sense. You have to expect that this is a rolling service. It's not going to be the same in 6 months from now. In fact, when you're watching this video back, it may already look different to what we've shown you today.
Absolutely. So next, what we're going to do is you need to make sure you know how to install and configure Windows Deployment Services, or WDS. You need to know how to, you need to know the difference between unicast and multicast and how to configure those. You need to be able to add images into WDS because that's what WDS is doing. It's deploying images. How you configure scheduling and how you restrict who can receive specific images. So basically, you just need to know how to use WDS for the exam. So let's take a look at another question. So you're asked to automate as much of Windows Deployment Services as possible. Which of the following will assist in this? So we've got WDS Diag, we've got WDS Pixie, WDS Util, and WDS Module for PowerShell. So when we look at the answers here, we see that the answer for this is WDS Util and the WDS Module for Windows PowerShell. So the big takeaways is you need to know how WDS fits into Light Touch and Zero Touch. You need to know all of the tools at work. And in this question specifically, I can take away some answers here because WDS Diag, and almost any time you see a tool that says Diag, it's an informational tool. It's always grabbing information. So I would throw that out right away. Now I have opportunity for, you know, 2 out of 3. WDS Pixie, that is the DLL that's used to Pixie into WDS. So I know that that is not used to automate this process, the WDS itself. So I would simply go with those other answers.
Right. And it's often always the case people think, you know, if you see the word automate and PowerShell in the same sentence, they're obviously going to go together. You know, in this case, that's no exception as well. But you need to have practiced that. In this case, you may have got off lightly if this was your real exam question. I would have expected a WDS question on PowerShell to actually involve some command line there on the real exam and to say, what would you need to type to make such and such happen, rather than just a little bit more generic, perhaps we're being a little bit easy on you here. I would expect to go down to commandlet level to WDS Util specifically. I'd expect you to know command line switches with that. It's not enough just to know, hey, that's the executable. You've got to know, you know, type it out, WDS Util slash question, type it out, see what you can do with that. You don't necessarily need to have tried yourself every single option, but you do need to know what those switches are so you know what you can automate with it. And preferably use some examples and go through and test it yourself. Okay, so let's take a look next at MDT and Configuration Manager. This is part of an evolving set of tech that we're putting together here now. MDT can be used on its own. Configuration Manager can be used on its own. Are they better together? Sure, of course they are. You've got to know how to put those technologies together inside of Configuration Manager so that you know how to push out images. Ultimately, you're building here light touch or zero touch images. That's the goal of integrating these together, so you can use the tool set that MDT brings with it, so you can create those boot images and those deployment images that you want to ship out. If you haven't done much on this, we're going to be talking about some references at the end that we're going to point you towards, so you can go off and do some self-learning on that if you don't have that technology stack back at the ranch to play with. So let's just take a quick look at an example of a question that might come around that area to do with integrating the two. So what would you need to do to integrate MDT and Configuration Manager? It's a pretty straightforward question, but do you know the answer? So the answer in this case is to use the server name and site code. So within Configuration Manager, you have a site code that you have to point that towards. Your environment may only have one site, or it may have several sites, but you have to integrate it with a specific site when you're installing this. And you have to know the server name of the configuration manager endpoint that you're going to connect that with. Credentials sounds viable. The unqualified candidate is going to get put off here, but when they see credentials, because when we say integration, you're going to think, well, I need to be an admin. I need to be, no. The unqualified candidate is going to get caught out when they see credentials here, unfortunately. Okay, so our next area here is looking at applications again. In this case, virtual applications. When I first started out in IT, we always installed applications the old-fashioned way. Your 32-bit apps, 64-bit apps would have always been installed by hand by the administrator. Today, that's different. Applications get deployed in a number of different ways. So we might be using, for example, AppV. Now, AppV isn't available to everybody if they don't have software assurance, for example, but you need to get your hands on that. You need to have played with it. We need to know how to sequence an application, and that really means getting an application ready that you've already got. It's a pre-existing app, but you're packaging it and you're making it an AppV package ready so that you can deploy that. How you deploy it? Well, there's a few different ways. So again, you've got to know, so I've got my AppV package, how can I distribute that? I could distribute it with Config Manager, or I could distribute it another way too. So we need to know how to make that package, but how do we deliver that? How do we get that to our users' machines as well? And those machines could be desktops, but they could also be virtual sessions too. They could be RDS sessions, they could be VDI sessions. So you've got to know how those overlap as well. All right, so let's take a look at a question here around using Configuration Manager to deploy those virtual applications. In this case, we're saying we want to deploy a virtual application, but we recognize that the AppV client software isn't installed yet on our target devices. What's our best course of action? Well, it's a chicken and egg here because we do need the AppV client installing before we can run AppV applications. But how do we do it? So our answer is that you can actually configure dependencies. Software can have other software dependencies, so that you must install one before the other can be installed. And in this case, that's the best answer. We could deploy the AppV client to all systems. That would kind of get it done, but it's actually smarter to only deploy it to the computers in question where the application's going to be needed, rather than deploy it out to all computers that are under the control of Configuration Manager. Okay, that would be a little bit too heavy-handed. The better answer would be to join that together with the app itself and for it to be an application prerequisite in effect.
Awesome. So the next thing we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about planning for application upgrades. So this is all about looking at your applications and looking at application coexistence. So when you have applications that are sitting together, how are they going to coexist? You're also planning for compatibility issues. So using tools and working within your environment to determine what issues you have. Then you're going to plan for migrating application settings and configurations. You're also going to take a look at a plan to resequence or redeploy your apps. So I'm going to take a little bit of lead here, and I'm going to ask Chris a question here. So Chris, you've got an application deployed to a portion of your clients.
Okay.
But you want to halt any more deployments without installing it for users who are happy using what they have. What should you do?
Good question. You know, there are several ways we could do this. One of the options that people sometimes think here is when they're actually replacing an application is that they could supersede it. But we've got to know the difference here between a supersede and a retirement of an application. They kind of sound similar. They sound like they're doing the same job, but in fact, they're totally different. Application supersedence is when we're replacing a version 1 with a version 2. Retiring an application, for example, is saying, well, we don't want that to be put out anymore. We're going to stop that from being installed and now put out a whole different application instead. So let's take a look at our answer here if we were doing this for real. Okay. If we've got people who are happy using applications, but we just want to prevent new ones coming out, the retirement is going to be the best option. Superseding an application is going to replace it for everybody, and that's not what this question's aiming at, okay?
Yep, and that's one of those that, again, using that technology that Chris and I have been talking about going through each of these, finding the answers that are might be an answer for another scenario, but not this specific scenario. And that is such a key thing when you're doing Microsoft certifications exams, because they so like to take an answer and literally, I think sometimes they'll take the same answers and create, you've seen, where they create questions that are different scenarios.
Yeah, I mean,
but use the same sort of answers. And that's what you have to keep in mind, is that what can be tricky when you're doing this is that you start reading the answer before really digesting what that question is looking for. And you go, I know what that does. That's completely plausible. And you hit A and it doesn't work for that scenario. So make sure when you're in that exam that you take the time, you read through the question. Then you read through the answers, and I always do a read of the question, then I read through the answers, and then I read the question again just to make sure that I'm all good, and then I start going at it to see if I've got it right. I try not to jump in unless I think I'm 100% sure I know the answer. I try not to make a judgment right away on that.
Yeah, no, that's a great piece of advice. You know, I know it sounds basic, but you've said it, right? Read the question. That is one of the most important pieces of advice. I have so many students coming back to me saying, I got this answer wrong, but I thought I knew that tech. I use it every day. Yeah, but did you actually read what that question was saying? Here, it's a subtlety. You know, we don't want to necessarily replace the application. We just want to halt new installs of it. So don't jump ahead there. Look at what it's actually saying. What is the requirement that they're drawing out? Okay, there's a subtle differentiator here between doing A and doing B, and that's going to drive you potentially to the wrong answer. Not that they're trying to trick you there, but it's a little bit of comprehension. What are they asking me to actually do? This might be not quite what I was expecting or not the most common scenario, but there is the scenario in front of me. What do I need to do to address that particular set of needs?
Absolutely. So next we're going to take a look at configuring Configuration Manager for OSD. So you need to be familiar with how to configure deployment packages and applications, how to configure task sequences. So the processes you use to deploy using OSD, you need to be able to manage your driver pools and manage the boot and deployment images. So really what you're needing to be able to do is configure and manage Configuration Manager to be able to send out images and configure those with drivers, with boot images, all of those sorts of things. So let's take a look at our question here. So you have been asked to deploy Windows 8.1 to a collection of workstations. You want to create the deployment in Configuration Manager Console. What object do you deploy? So let's just break this question down a little bit. So we know that this is a Configuration Manager Console question. We're not just using WDS here. So we know we're using ConfigMan. What object do you use, do you deploy here? So if we take a look at the answer, we see that the answer is a task sequence. That's the best answer because of a couple things. One, that's what Configuration Manager uses to deploy it. You create a task sequence, and inside that task sequence are all of the other pieces. So like in our answer, it has an x86 boot image as it will work with both 32 and 64-bit. That doesn't exist. You have boot images that are specific to your platforms, either x86 or 64-bit. So actually, A, I throw that right out. B, an operating system image of the same platform as a hardware. And C, a driver package. While these are required for what you're doing, they're actually part of what you put into Configuration Manager and you're going to call in the task sequence. So this is one of those tricky questions as well, is that what you have to remember is it's calling for one thing and the best answer. And the best answer here is a task sequence because it uses those other two pieces.
Yeah, and I feel this is one of those questions where it's almost like the top of the pyramid. You've got to know WDS because that's being used underneath here. We've got to know Configuration Manager. We've got to know MDT and task sequences is layer upon layer upon layer of tech. You've got to know those individually here, but also in this case, it's almost like the very toppermost part of that structure, that we're combining all of those. We know that we need a driver package perhaps as part of that, or an operating system image, but the task sequence is wrapping it all together, and that's our object that we need to create and deploy in this example here. So again, I put you back to the fact that it's not just I know what Config Manager does, but it's how do I build that? What are those pieces of the jigsaw puzzle that you were describing there that combine to make that task sequence? So we've got to know the whole end-to-end on that whole thing there. And for some folks, that is tricky, but this is all about enterprise. Let's think about the name of this certification here for 1 second. This is all about getting enterprise-grade technologies out there, using those tools across. This is not going to be for small companies. You know, you may work in a small company, but you've got to know the tools would be used if you were managing 100,000 PCs on your network. So this can be tough for some people, but you've got to play with this. You know, we're not trying to surprise folks. This is what's on here. But you've got to combine those tools together and use them and practice that. It's really important.
Absolutely. So, you know, we've covered a lot of really good things. We've covered a bunch of different areas. So it's always good at this point. What we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about some of the tools and how you get ready for the exam. So we've already talked about you need to have a test environment. You have to build things. You have to play with things. So that's kind of the physical stuff. You build your virtual machines and your little environments, and you play around with the technology. So in order to get up on that technology, oftentimes we need to research that. And some good tools, if we take a look at our tools here, are taking a look at some of the test guides that are created by Microsoft Press. So here we have the exam references for 70 or for 695 and for the 696 exam. Notice I said 70 and I stopped. The reason being is that the exams you'll find go by the last three numbers, 695 and 696, because depending on which exam you take, there's different versions. There's a 70, there's a 73, there's a 74, and I'll be quite honest, I don't know which one of those fit into which of the spaces. Just know that there are different exam versions, but if you're taking a 695 exam, it's going to be covered by that content. So these are really good books, and they're going to really help you focus. They're going to give you some references and give you some good hands-on for that. The other thing you can do is if you like in-place learning, you can always go and take a Microsoft official course. So you can do these online and also in the classroom, instructor-led training. So we've got 2695B and 2696B as well. And these map to the specific exams. So these may be a 4 to 5 day course, instructor-led, and you can take them online if you like to take them online, or if you like to sit in the classroom with an instructor, you'll be able to do that, and it'll give you a lot of great information. It's also going to give you a lot of hands-on.
Yeah, and that's one good point there, is because a lot of folks don't have this set up at work. They don't have the time or the opportunity to configure this at home either. If you go on an instructor-led course, that's all going to be built for you. That environment, those virtual machines, they're ready for you on that Monday morning when you walk into the classroom. And you're getting a qualified instructor there to walk you through that, to guide you through the labs and to help you out, and of course to answer questions. That's one aspect that, you know, really adds value in the doing a course as opposed to just learning this yourself. Of course, you know, courses are not for everyone. We recognize that. And so there's a whole bunch of other content that you guys can consume from MVA. So just to list out a few, I'm not going to read them all out. Windows 8.1, know your operating systems here. Know about how we install them, configure them, and so on. So we've got a whole bunch of these around different scenarios. There's a deployment jumpstart. So if you're new to deployment and some of the things we've been talking about there, such as WDS and MDT, if all that's kind of new to you, take a look at that one. Windows to go, specific scenario for mobile workers. That's definitely worth looking at as well. But we've also got courses on things like migrating. You know, that's perfectly valid in this track as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the thing to keep in mind here as well is that notice these ones all reference Windows 8.1, also some migration, Office 365, is that MVA will get courses out there for Windows 10. I know they've got a few out there now, but, you know, it's still fairly new on the market. So a lot of these will have I would guess that they'll do a Windows 10 deployment jumpstart. They may very well have one out there. I'm just not sure. Right. But important thing I just wanted to tag in on here is that all of these are links. So you don't have to just go out to MVA and start searching for these. The PowerPoint that's going to come with this video that you're watching will have all of the hyperlinks in it. So you'll just be able to click on those and go. So then we've got a few more sessions here, and I'm not going to go through the whole list of them. Just know that you've got a number of different sessions that go in here. And then last, you know, exam facts you might not know. So one thing that Microsoft does is they do this thing. It's called the second shot. And what this is I love second shots for my students, is that Microsoft exams are hard. And even if you know the material cold, a lot of times people have test-taking anxiety. Yeah. So second shots give you that opportunity if you just have a bad day. So those are now until January 2016. And I can't speak for Microsoft knowing what's going to happen in the future, but I know from past experience that they roll these through on a fairly regular basis. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't go out now and try to take that exam if you're ready. You should absolutely do that. Just know that if you miss a second shot now, there might be one available for you later. Also, Microsoft they've started doing online testing. So if you'd like to test in your own home, you can do that. I haven't done that yet. I've heard about it. One thing it is, you are testing in your own home, so you have to have a camera and you have to have all sorts of things. And it's one of those where it might work for some people. I know other people that have done it that won't do it again. But it is definitely an option for you. It does give you that option if there's not a testing center near you. So this is a great option that Microsoft rolled out for those people that are, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours from a testing center. They can still go online and get certified through Microsoft.
Yeah, you know, I tried that out recently, and I loved it. You know, if I want, I can even take one on a Saturday night.
Yep, it's awesome.
If there's nothing on TV, so what excuse have you got? Go book it in and have a go.
Exactly.
Sit there in your pajamas and do one.
So then we've got a few other resources. You know, of course, we've got the Microsoft Learning site, Microsoft.com/learning. The Microsoft Virtual Academy, or MVA, as we were talking about before, is a really rich library of a lot of content, and that keeps changing every single week. So they're always putting stuff up there. Then you've also got, you know, Microsoft training certification guides that are available here as well. So that's part one. We're going to have part two coming up for you. So you'll be able to take a look at that, and we'll go and finish off giving you more information about what you really need as you start going through, or maybe you're in the process, helping you prepare for that exam. So I'm Michael Bender.
I'm Chris Rhodes.
Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you in part two.
Thanks a lot.